Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Tessie.
And we started this podcast because we believe it isn't the female celebrity making waves in this world. It's the moms tending to their toddlers while launching international nonprofits or nursing their babies or making PB&Js for lunch or creating breathtaking art. In the Mama Bear community, we support and encourage women doing big and bold things with their lives, in addition to being great moms. And we dare listeners to harness the power of your Mama Bear to live a life of love and compassion.
On today's episode, we interview a woman who is a mother, an avid reader, which, heller, same, a homeschooler, and world traveler. She's also a witness to the terrible tragedy that took place at Sandy Hook Elementary School in December of 2012. Jamie Martin has written a book that we loved and we know you will too. It's called Give Your Child the World, Raising Globally Minded Kids One Book at a Time. We aren't going to spend a lot of time introducing this conversation because it really speaks for itself, but we do want to tell you what we loved about Jamie and about her book.
That's right. First of all, she's a reader. Tessie, yes. We love readers. We're both avid readers. We love books. We want our kids to love books. I am unashamedly the unpopular aunt who insists on marking special occasions like Christmases and birthdays with books.
You are.
It's the English teacher in me. They'll thank me later. But before we jump into this conversation with Jamie, let's talk about what we've got our noses in or what's maybe gathering dust on our nightstand because we're too tired to read more than two or three pages at a time.
I mean, seriously, the Olympics are ruining my book reading time before bed. Mm-hmm. But I gotta say, I'm reading a book called Dot Complicated, Untangling Our Wired Lives by Randi Zuckerberg. She is the sister to Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg.
And
yeah, it is. It's really interesting. Zach saw her speak at a conference he went to, and he knew I would really enjoy it. Honestly, it started a little clunky for me, but it's getting pretty good. What are you reading?
I am reading a pretty light read. It's a retelling of the novel Emma. Oh. It's by Alexander McCall Smith, the author of the number one ladies detective agency series. Those I enjoyed the first several. I haven't kept up with the series, but I feel like, you know, those are both books that Jamie would approve of, especially the ladies detective agency stories. Those are set in Botswana.
Oh, I don't think I've read those. I don't
really
think I know anything about them. Yeah.
They're delightful. They're okay. Delightful.
Okay. Well, let's link to them in the show notes so that I can follow that and grab them.
Okay. Tessie, what are you recommending to your kids these days?
I mean, Leslie, I don't think you actually need to ask, nor do any of our listeners who've been here a while. The Harry Potter!
That's right. The new book. How is it?
It's so good. I read it in like an hour and a half. And then so it's kind of going through the ranks of my kids who finished the original series. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I admit to not being a partial witness because I just am obsessed with all things Potter. So
Yes, you are.
So I loved it. It was too short. It was not long enough. I wanted to have an entire new series of it. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it was great. It was great. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I'm trying to encourage my youngest to read a series called Anna Hibiscus. I think probably a lot of our listeners maybe have heard of it. It's about a girl who is growing up and she says in amazing Africa with her father and her Canadian mother and her twin brothers named Double and Trouble. It's an adorable read. It's actually included on Jamie's list in her book. My oldest is reading James Herriot, who was a British vet and a writer, and he writes a lot about animals and their owners. So I'm pretty excited about that. He actually grabbed those when he was visiting with my parents, and so his grandfather recommended these. And then I have another reader who is an avid Sports Illustrated for Kids fan. That's about it right now.
I have one of those. In our introductions, like we've said before, the real reason Leslie and I do them is because each of our interviews, there's something we want the listener to pull out and have as a takeaway that they can incorporate in their daily lives or their monthly, you know, something to take away and kind of implement to, like we said, just kind of spread joy and compassion wherever they go. And by that, we also mean us. What are you and I taking away from the conversation we had with our people, right? One of our favorite things, and the listener will be able to tell this resonated with both of us, was just that Jamie believes in the power of story. We've all got one. You can uncover story everywhere, even in the pages of Sports Illustrated. Thankfully, Eli and Teriku are going to be okay.
Yes, they are.
And you can enter into another's experience. I mean, doing that just helps us understand the world better. We love that and totally agree.
Oh, yeah. You know, we also really love Jamie and just the emphasis that she places on raising globally minded kids. And it's something that we believe very strongly in, I think. We've actually done an entire episode on globetrotting with kids. We'll link that episode. And we talk about travel with our kids. But we also fully realize that not everyone has a huge budget for travel. It's certainly expensive. It is certainly a luxury. But even without setting a foot in another country, you really can begin to understand another place or another way of life or another culture or an entirely different worldview simply by opening up the pages of a book. And we want our kids to love the world. We want them to be curious. We want them to have a basic understanding, really, that the world is small and that we are all connected. We can do this in a lot of ways, but books are integral to this mind-bending and mind-shaping thing that we do in, as we parent. And Jamie's book really offers a great guide to introducing kids of all ages to this complex and beautiful world from their own zip code.
Yeah, I love that. We, of course, have linked Jamie's book in the show notes. It's really easy to find. Make sure you check that out. But it's also... Leslie, I feel like this is a great time. We haven't done it for a while to remind our listeners about the promotion we have going on with Audible. If you're like me and still have the last few weeks of summer in Michigan, we don't start school till after Labor Day. Somebody send help. No. I downloaded a few from Audible for our last family trip before school starts. So you can do that too. Hop over to audible.com/mamabeardares and receive 2 free audio downloads and 1 free month trial with that code of mamabeardare, or by clicking the link on our website at mamabeardarespodcast.com and tell us what you're reading, what your kids are reading, or if you're not reading, what you wish you were. We would love to know.
That's right. Let's get to it. Jamie Martin is a woman like you who does many things. She's a mom to 3 beautiful babes, a wife to her husband, Steve, and she's a woman that's passionate about homeschooling and intentional parenting. She's also a blogger and an author. This year, she released her 5th book, Give Your Child the World, Raising Globally Minded Kids, 1 Book at a Time. As soon as Tessie and I heard the title, we knew we would love this book, and I'm telling you, it did not disappoint. We are so excited to welcome Jamie Martin onto the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you so much. You know, whenever I'm introduced on a podcast, I always just wish that that person would come and stand at the bottom of my stairs on a morning and read the introduction out as I come down so that my kids could hear. And, you know, it might just inspire a little respect around here, because you just always sound so cool in a podcast introduction. It's really good. It's really good for the self-esteem. So thank you.
You are welcome. We all deserve that introduction, I think.
I know.
Well, let's jump into the episode here. So we love just hearing about how our guests grew up, specifically kind of what part of your childhood led you to where you are right now.
Okay, well, I had a pretty typical suburban upbringing. I grew up in Wilmington, North Carolina, and that's where I lived my whole life, pretty much in the same house the whole time. And also I went to college there until I got married. So it's not exactly a global extravaganza when you look at my childhood, but I did have someone in my life who inspired a sense of adventure, and that was my dad. We always just enjoyed taking road trips. And when I say road trips, I mean ones that lasted 2 hours there and back. We just would get in the car and go somewhere, even if it ended up being just another Burger King that we'd never been to before. And come back again. But sometimes we visited war memorials or battlegrounds or historical things, and very spontaneously we'd pull off the side of the road and look at something that struck our fancy. So through that, I just found that I grew up with this sense of adventure, and I think that's part of what has led me to the more global life that I have now. And on the other hand, my mom really saw that I was interested in books, and she began to nurture that just through taking me to the library. And I love sharing that story mainly because I think sometimes as moms, we put this really heavy burden on our shoulders about being inspirational and kind of being everything to our kids. And really, no one else in my family was a huge book lover, but they just saw that in me. And I'm so grateful that she took the time to nurture and encourage that, even when it wasn't necessarily her passion.
I love that. And I like how you kind of talk about both of your parents as embracing sort of these bite-size adventures and, just the really simple act of showing up at the library. So we'll get into more of the book later, obviously, and about sort of this your sense of adventure and this global lifestyle that you've embraced. But it really began with these very doable things that maybe took place in your own town at the library or just a couple of hours away. And that's something all of us can do, right? It's accessible to all of us, whether we can afford a plane ticket somewhere or not.
Exactly. That's what I'm so passionate about. Yeah.
Now, were you a kid, Jamie, who kind of walked around with her head in the clouds a little bit? I think maybe I'm putting some of myself onto your story because I think you're really relatable. But I love how you write about kids and how you sort of just honor that awe and that wonder that so many children just walk around with on a daily basis. Is that something you remember, viscerally as being a part of who you were as a kid?
I think in some ways it definitely is. I definitely believed in looking for scope for the imagination, and searching that out through books was a big way because as an introvert, I was in the minority in my family growing up. My two sisters and my mom are all extroverts. My dad kind of shared that introverted personality type with me. But because of that, then books became a way that I could retreat, but still have this huge world at my disposal, just from my bedroom. So it became a real win-win, and through that, I think I was able to just find wonder in the world and find it fascinating. Not in like a, I was kind of floating above the clouds way, but just in a way that began to nurture the person that I really am now. And definitely imagination was a big part of that.
Yeah, I so relate to the idea. I mean, I'm actually an extrovert, but I so see in my own kids, the introverts are constantly pulled to books. It's they never ever complain when I'm like, time to get our hour of reading in or whatever it is. They're just like, yes, they're just so excited for that moment of retreat. So I love that. I hadn't really made that connection, but I think you're right. They can still feel like they're kind of in the world, but they get it in a safe way to them that feels really good to them. When you were talking in your books and on your blogs, one of the things that I so related to was just like books were your first, I mean, they should be your first introduction to the rest of the world, right? Which is why as parents, sometimes you have to be really intentional about exposing them to books that aren't just like the same exact book over and over.
Yes.
You know, which obviously is one of the reasons, Leslie, and I just loved your book. But that was one of the ways that you fell in love with the world. And you write on your blog about raising an international family. Your husband is from England. You have a daughter from India and a son from Liberia, as well as a biological son. It seems like sometimes people need a reason like that, like welcoming many different cultures and countries, or marrying or adopting or whatever. Sometimes seems like they need that in order to really broaden their perspective. But do you feel like you already had that idea of the world as different than your own community because of books before all of that?
I do, definitely. I was the child collecting maps and plotting, you know, both the books I was reading and the places I wanted to go. And I used to joke with my high school girlfriends, I would spin a globe and talk about where my husband was going to be from. And then I'd just close my eyes and point to a place and and then see where it landed. And so I had that, even though I'd never been on an airplane and I had maybe only barely been out of my own state, I just had this deep connection with the world and adventure. And I had decided I wanted to be a missionary one day. So then our expression of building a family in the way that it ended up happening, definitely, like you're saying, it opened my eyes to suddenly I had a new reason to really develop the idea of finding new stories to share with my kids because they were also from other countries. So that took it to another level. But it was already there, just a deep part of who I was. And I think a big reason was because of the books that I had read.
I loved that game as a kid as well, of just spinning the globe and figuring out like, oh, I'm going to live here.
Yes.
Panama.
Exactly. I wonder how many people play that game. I feel like there's actually a book, one of the Dr. Doolittle stories, where that's how they choose where they're going to go, is by sticking a pin in a map or something like that. So, yeah.
I was going to say, I'm still playing that game, ladies. I am still playing that game. So
that's right. That's so great. So just to pivot a little bit, I really want to talk to you about homeschooling. We've had women on the show before who homeschool, but we haven't really gotten into it with them at all. So let's just talk a little bit about what made you want to educate your three children in this way.
Okay, well, I have to confess first that I never anticipated myself as a homeschooler. I had a lot of homeschooling stereotypes in my head that I think probably a lot of people can relate to. But I just came to it when I knew our daughter was coming home from India. She was going to be four. And so finally the kind of question mark of what are we going to do for school? It wasn't that far away on the horizon as it had been when I just had my little boys. And I decided that just to be fair, I should really check out all of the options that were available to us. So that meant public schools, private schools, homeschooling. And I began a research project of my own just to investigate. And when I began to look into homeschooling, I was blown away by what I saw, in that I found something far from the stereotypes that I had held in my head, even some subconsciously without, where I had always thought that people who homeschool were trying to keep their children from the world. And what I saw when I looked into it is that, oh my goodness, this could be a way to really open the world to my children in a new way. And as soon as I read more about it, I found that I realized I would have loved learning that way myself. So it also felt kind of like a do-over for me to explore parts of my education that maybe hadn't been as nurtured when I was growing up. And the main reason, though, that I decided to give it a try was because Trishna was coming to us after spending 4 years in an orphanage, in an institution, and it just didn't feel right inside to go from that to sending her to spend most of her hours in another institutionalized setting. And that was just what initially we decided, okay, well, we feel like she really needs more time just to learn what it means to be a family. And that's the most important part of her education right now. So having that as an impetus encouraged us to just at least give it a try. I don't think we ever foresaw what was going to happen and that it would become this really long-term thing. Not only that, but that my writing career would end up being based around this very thing that started as like a touch and go, we'll just try it for a year thing. But that's what ended up happening. I'm glad that we had that reason to give us, I think it would just gave us the extra push to give it a try.
Well, that's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, obviously you researched, right? You did your homework, you looked into all of these other options for schooling. And clearly, if anyone picks the book up, they're going to see immediately that you are a researcher. So do you have to be a researcher to homeschool? Or what advice could you give to mama bears listening who might be interested in homeschooling, but don't know, you know, if they have what it takes or just even know how to start?
Right. Well, if you are a mama bear, then you definitely have what it takes because mama bears just will do anything to get their kids what they need. And that in itself, I feel, is one of the biggest pros for homeschooling because no one is going to advocate for our kids in the same way that we will. So you definitely have what it takes. I think it can feel overwhelming when you don't know how it feels like a whole new world to get into. I actually wrote a post on Simple Homeschool, and maybe I can send you the link so you could put it in the show notes, but it is called How to Homeschool. And it just is a really gentle introduction about the logistical side of things, like laws to consider based on where you live, as well as the more philosophical side of things. And so it's really, it's not as difficult as it sounds. Like all new things, it feels so huge when you start it. And then after a while, you get into the flow and it just becomes part of what you do and how you live your life. So if you enjoy learning yourself, then you would probably enjoy teaching your kids because it just becomes an extension of kind of, this is what we do, this is how we live, this is how we learn, and it all kind of flows together. That's what I love about it the most, is that we've been able to blur those lines of learning and home, and we've just made life is our learning project. And for me, that feels really good. And I've enjoyed being able to have the opportunity to share that with the kids.
Yeah, I so appreciate that. And you know, one of our goals when we set out to start this podcast was to break down misconceptions about people in general, you know, because as you were talking about homeschooling, that you had this idea of who did it, what they did and why they did it, you know? And the reality is we don't know that, you know, because I agree with you. I had the same misconceptions until so many of my friends started to do it for the exact reason that you talked about. And I love the way you described it. Just, I wanted to open them up to the world, not close them off from the world. My kids are in public school, but I agree that that is certainly missing in public school. And then I feel more pressure to give them that outside of school, right? Is just this introduction to the world. So when our readers follow the links, please definitely send us that. And then we'll, of course, link to your blog and where they can buy the book in our show notes. But I just encourage them to look around because I think you break the stereotypes in so many ways. And obviously your kids are flourishing. So I just countercultural parenting is so hard in whatever capacity you're talking about. So I think, you know, the important lesson is that, you know, mama bears, if you feel like something is right for you, you need to explore that, right? Like, listen to that sign.
Yes, definitely. And I also want to be, I am definitely pro homeschooling, but really I'm pro intentional education. And I just want people to think through their options and then just go with the way that they feel led. Looking at your individual kids, you are the expert on your family and the one empowered and inspired to be able to make that decision and to just have that feeling of knowing what your family needs, what your kids need. And to be able to make that decision in confidence, not feeling pressured because most people do this or most of my friends are doing this. We all need something different. And sometimes we need something different this year that we didn't need last year. And that's okay too. It doesn't have to be forever, or we don't have to, you know, become poster children for homeschooling or for public school, or we can embrace what we need right now and just be grateful that we have so much freedom and the choices to be able to make and decide, which are lacking in so many countries and places around the world.
So true.
Oh, yeah. So thanks. True.
Thanks for pointing that out. I mean, I feel like in so many ways, you know, all roads really can lead to love, right? Like, no matter the time, the timing of it, or the reasons behind it, we can embrace things and look for the good and make it work for us where we're at. And you're absolutely right. I mean, gosh, what freedom and what resources we have in 2016 in this place that we live. Jamie, you mentioned, you know, being able to kind of dovetail your homeschooling with your writing. And I would love to hear about that, because like we were joking in the introduction, you know, how it sounds so great. But the truth is, like, you've written a number of books while homeschooling and raising three children. And to the average cat out there, that it's really impressive, and it can be really intimidating. Like, gosh, why do I even try, you know? But I like what you've said about it's just sort of part of the way you live and the way you learn, and it's all kind of fluid, and you've made it work all together. So tell us a little bit about how that works, just really practically speaking.
Well, it's worked so differently over the whole years. This is my 8th year of blogging, and I had started to write my first book a year before I began blogging. So that makes 9 years in total that I've been trying to juggle all of this. And over that time, it's just looked so different depending on how old the kids are and if we had childcare help or not. We've had seasons of both. And so for a long time, I just dabbled in it when the kids were napping because they still had nap time. And when I started writing my first book, which is called Steady Days, I literally carved out one night per week. And I would go to our local Panera Bread. And I was doing this completely blindly. I had no idea who would ever read this. It was just something I felt really called to write. And so that's why I started. And some nights I dragged myself out of the house exhausted, and I did not want to do it. And I only did it because I really felt a spiritual calling that God had told me to write this book. And so I did. So it was not glamorous at any stage at all. And it was literally just baby steps. And then sometimes maybe one of the kids would be having an awful season, you know, a really difficult season where we weren't sleeping much or something like that. And I remember one time I took a 6-week break from any of it and just thought, maybe this is not going to happen. And then the tide would turn and I could devote just a little bit of time. So I have to, you know, de-glamorize the the way that it can sound sometimes because it doesn't feel that way at all. Now that the kids are older, I mean, when you're just able to sleep through the night, like that's glamorous, right?
Yes.
So that changes everything. Yeah. So now that blogging and writing has also become part of a job for me in one way, definitely labor of love, but a job that needs more committed hours. Then I write in the morning before the kids get up, usually 6:30-ish. And then I'll have some time when the kids work independently that I can do a bit more and then save more for the afternoon. But we also right now we have a sitter that comes 2 mornings a week. And that is that's a new development just since right before the book came out. And oh my goodness, it is changing my life. And I'm very, I'm so thankful for the margin, but that's enabled me to get through this book launch season without bordering on insanity at very many points. I probably still have bordered on it sometimes, but not as often as I would have. And but 2 of my books, when you say 5 books, it sounds like a lot. 2 of my books are kind of shorter ebooks that are compilations of different blog posts. And so to me, I usually, I tend to think of Give Your Child the World as my third book, even though it says 5 on Amazon. And this is definitely my most ambitious project to date. But yeah, it was all done in baby steps with making the family the priority, because as a homeschooling family, obviously you have to. And that's really why Give Your Child the World ended up being a 5-year project on top of being very research intensive. Mm-hmm. It was just, I knew that I could only give what I could give, and I wasn't going to stretch myself to an unhealthy point, because that's not the model I want to set for my readers or my family or anyone. And I needed to be able to do it in the way that fit me. And it ended up taking 5 years, which was hard at some points. But it's done. So it's just a testament. It's a testament to anyone out there who has writing ambitions or anything, that it really does all add up and make a difference eventually if you just keep going.
I love it. And thank you for sort of demystifying that process. You know, I think sometimes we look at, you know, outwardly at the accomplishments of others, and it can be really daunting. But what I hear you saying is just, you know, this was a process. It took 9 years, right? You said you've been writing, and it's been baby steps, and it's been one nap time at a time. And
that's,
it's been,
right,
you know, one glorious hour at Panera at a time, and one morning of babysitting, and it all adds up. So just for any of our listeners out there, whether it's writing, as you said, or any sort of pursuit that they're doing kind of for who we call like the other self, you know, they're nurturing this sort of goal or this passion of theirs. It, you got to just do it one step at a time. It's as Anne Lamott says, bird by bird.
Yes. You know? Yes.
So that's, I appreciate just your honesty and really just like realizing that about yourself too, you know, that this didn't just wake up, like you worked really hard and did great things. So congrats on this book.
Thank you. Thank
yeah. We love it. And we think, you know, that's a really inspiring process too for all of us.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Well, let's get into that book. So it's called Give Your Child the World, Raising Globally Minded Kids One Book at a Time. We could probably rename this podcast Give Your Child the World, Raising Globally Minded Kids One Podcast at a Time. That's our goal. But you had just said it took you 5 years to complete, which anyone, when you pick up the book, you will know that immediately. I mean, it is so labor intensive. It's so clearly label intensive. So how did you come up with the idea for the book in the first place?
It came over time, as most things do, But it was really an expression of our new growing family from all over the world, a mini United Nations, as I sometimes call us. And after Trishna joined us, she became our oldest child, but she had joined us last. So then she was 4 when she came home. My son Jonathan just turned 3, and Elijah, my son from Liberia, was 2. And that was just all kinds of craziness for a good long while, survival mode and all of that, and just learning what it meant to be a family, learning rhythms and routines to make life work. But afterwards, after a couple years of that, when things settled down just a little bit, I began to feel this burden of, you know, these countries are going to be part of us forever. And how am I going to connect my kids with their birth cultures until we're able to travel? We didn't have much money back then. And so that wasn't an option. Plus, I did not want to get on a plane with the 4, 3, and 2-year-old all at the same time either. And so I wanted to find a different way. How could we introduce these cultures and make them part of our lives now, so that they will always be part of our lives and give us some foundation to build on? And books was a natural way for me to do that because of my love for them from growing up myself. And I began doing research just for us personally, one book at a time, looking for titles that would introduce us to different parts of the world. I had been really inspired by another reading treasury called Honey for a Child's Heart by Gladys Hunt. And that is a book about books too. When I was just found out I was pregnant with my son, Jonathan, I had heard about this book and I drove, we lived 45 minutes away from any kind of town then in Texas. I drove 45 minutes to the Barnes & Noble just to buy this book because I was so excited at the idea of having my own baby and having someone to read to and falling in love with all of these kids' titles. And so her book was a mainstay in our home, and I still refer to it now. Just for using books in your family life and finding some of the best quality children's books. And between that and what I was trying to do with our global book connections, I slowly started to think, huh, what if there was like a global version of Honey for a Child's Heart? What would that look like? And wouldn't it have been amazing if I had had that? It would have saved me so much time. And and I wonder if other people would be interested in that. And so it kind of slowly came, the idea came from that experience of merging these two things that had been important to us. And I just felt like, well, there are probably other parents who would be interested in this as well.
Yes, other people are interested, Jane. Your hunch was right. One thing I love when I was reading this book, I really love just your appreciation of story. And if you don't mind, I want to read just a small section of what you've written. You write, "Thankfully, we have at our fingertips a miracle vaccine, one that can boost our children's immunity to the world's distractions and heaviness. Story. Well-chosen stories connect us with others, even those on the other side of the globe. Build your kids' lives on a story-solid foundation, and you'll give them the armor to shield themselves from the world's cynicism. You'll give them the confidence to persevere in the face of life's conflicts. You'll give them a reservoir of compassion that spills over into a lifetime of love in action." I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
It's really beautiful. Talk to us more about that idea of story and how it can function in the development of our kids.
Yes. Well, I talk in the book also about the difference between nonfiction and fiction and how we need both, but how they do different things for us and for our kids. So I feel like from nonfiction, we get the facts of a place. And for many of us, I think growing up, that was what we remember most from school, was we learned about Japan and we had to memorize the population and the exports and imports and the capital, and then put those back on the test later on. And that, you know, those things are important and they can be inspiring in the right situation. But I don't really know that learning those types of things ever made me fall in love with Japan and think, oh, I really want to go there because, you know, they have rice or whatever. Right. And so I feel like from nonfiction, we get the facts of a place, but from story, we get the heart. Mm-hmm. And that's what our kids need to kind of bolster and shield them from the craziness of the world that we now live in, and to give them courage that they can make a difference too. So from falling in love with story, our kids develop empathy and they develop compassion, and they learn that what we have in common with our neighbors on the other side of the world is so much greater than what separates us or what is different about us. And when I don't think most kids can articulate that, but when they've been raised on books with that underlying message, that is just there. And so it naturally grows with them into becoming something that stirs them and spurs them on, and can even, I believe, and I hope, help them as they get older and start to try to navigate and make sense of the headlines and not be swept away by those in fear, but instead can feel like, you know what, I'm called to be part of the solution for this. And what could that look like? And how can I give my life to benefit others? So that's really what it's about for me when I think of what I hope that story can do for my kids and for your kids and for our listeners' kids.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, we were holding back a lot of yes, honeys, back there.
Slow claps.
We love slow claps on the podcast. We actually just this past Wednesday released a, we call them Mama Bear Minis, about kind of current events. And we were talking about how do we raise our kids in a world that feels like it is begging us to separate from one another. And we forgot, I don't know how, Leslie and I as writers forgot to mention story. You know, we kind of did. We talked about like the idea of going back in time and listening to the stories about other civil rights movements and other movements that have helped in the past. But those can be really factual too. So I love what you're talking about. And it resonates so much. I can't believe we forgot that. But I think story is incredibly powerful, if not the most powerful, you know, when you're talking to someone face to face, which is essentially what a book is. You're that, you know, hopefully involved in it. It breaks down all stereotypes. It breaks down all matters of speaking. And then you're just really connecting in an intense way. So I'm so glad you brought that up. I think that's an essential part of how we can come together and realize not much actually separates us.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, we can connect to stories, and those connections connect us to a larger world, right? It's as you say in the book, actually, let me read this quote. You say, as the character's struggles become our own, we root for good to win, and we grasp more deeply the story we are writing with our own lives. And I love that. I love that line. Once again, you've really captured just sort of this bigger idea of how story plays out in our lives and how it plays out in just the interconnectedness of this world. So can you give some examples of how maybe this has played out in your life, just like characters that you've personally connected to as you've read, or maybe some that your kids connect to?
Yes. Well, I can definitely share a monumental family event where we used a story to kind of launch us into dealing with trauma of our own as a family, and being really grateful for a character's courage to inspire courage when we needed it. And that was we, as a family, this was maybe about a year ago, as a family, we were reading a biography about Corrie ten Boom. And so it was also connected. It was a World War II story, really. And it had been very inspiring. And the message there was really that even though these awful things had happened to her and her family, God was still with them, and he had still used them in the midst of real evil. And we had something to discuss with our kids that made having her example and her story a real helpful transition to talk about what had happened in our community, because we live in Newtown, Connecticut, mm-hmm. where the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary had taken place. And miraculously, it is a miracle that our kids at the time when it happened, and we lived here, they were 9, 8, and 7 or 8, 7, 6, something like that. And we did not have to tell them about it. They did not find out. And we made the decision to wait and see, even though our world and our community was kind of crumbling around us. We really felt like in their development, they weren't ready to try and grasp what had happened, because we were watching how ourselves and the world and the people on our streets, we couldn't grasp it as adults. Mm. And so we just knew that they couldn't. But a lot of people were saying, well, this is ridiculous. You're not going to be able to get away. They're going to find out somehow. But we decided to just pause and see what happened. And it was actually only 2 years later. So we were able to wait to have this conversation with them for 2 years. And then they came home from a club, a camp that they had been a part of, saying, like, some people were talking about, did something happen here in Newtown? And it happened to be at the time that as a family, we were reading and learning from this title about Corrie ten Boom. And I talked about it with Steve, my husband, later. And we just said, you know what, I think that they're ready now, because they were like 11, 10, and 9, which is just such a different position than being, you know, 9, 8, and 7. We just really felt that they were ready. And so I closed the book's cover. I got a little shaky. I feel like I was trembling. And, you know, I said something like, just like we can see that something bad happened to Corrie ten Boom and her family, but God was still with them. Something bad happened in Newtown, but God is still with us. Mm. And I know you guys recently recorded a podcast talking about tragedy and walking through that with kids and what's the best way to handle it. I think there can be many different ways, but what we decided was just to give very basic facts, not too many details, and then to just answer the questions that they had. And so that's what we did. And I was really amazed at how it clearly deeply impacted them, because how could it not when you're walking these same streets, and we drive by families' homes every day who lost children, and that's the school that my children would have been at if we had not been homeschooling.
Wow.
So yeah, it still feels like part of our lives even years later. And of course they felt that too. But I do feel like having the story and the example of walking through something really hard with courage, we were able to express, you know, why we believe we're here in this community, and how can we help, and what can we do to bring healing in our own way, in very little ways, by just a part of it was just, as you guys alluded to in your podcast, I think was just being willing to grieve with a community and how that in itself is very powerful, because we also had the whole world grieving with us, it felt like. Mm-hmm. And that meant so much. But it was definitely heaviest here with our neighbors. And yet there was something amazing. You know, you'd walk outside and see someone and maybe hug them in the middle of the road. There was this beautiful connection that comes from moments of awful trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's a long story to say that having the story we were reading at the time helped us navigate this very, very difficult conversation with our kids, and to place it within a context of courage and overcoming, and that this is part of our family story, and that we won't run away from it, but we will, you know, we'll dare to go through it with the complex emotions that it brings up, and see how what can inspire in us, and how much we just love our community. We have a saying here that it's nicer in Newtown. And my kids are always saying that whenever we drive somewhere, it's nicer in Newtown, or when something good happens, it's nicer in Newtown. And I've never seen, of all the places that we've lived or they've lived, I've never seen or felt such a connection to a place. And that's why I dedicated Give Your Child the World to the children of Newtown, because I just wanted to honor how this community has unlocked something for our family that really helped us to give our kids the world too.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, this is not new for our listeners, but I'm crying. I cry all the time. I think because I'm going to stick a little pin in our discussion of your book real quick, because, you know, Newtown really did bring a tragedy home. There's what we have such a good way of compartmentalizing as humans, you know, we're so good at it, which is bad in a lot of ways, but it does help to like further our species, I guess. But Newtown had a way of like not allowing us to compartmentalize, particularly white moms raising white babies, sending their kids to, you know, public school. And we saw that what you're discussing, this, you know, this community rallying around each other. I think that was amazing. That was the hard part to compartmentalize, because we were devastated and terrified, but also full of hope and full of, and witnessing all of this compassion. It was just really, I mean, things are nicer in Newtown. I'm going to agree with your kids. And you guys showed that so well, you know, but I'm fascinated. How in the world did you keep your kids from it for that long? I just need to know, like, how did you specifically do that? I can't imagine, and still be in the community.
Well, I'm amazed too. I mean, that's why I refer to it as miraculous, because looking back, I can't believe that we did that either. We didn't set out for it to be 2 years. We just kind of said, let's see what happens. Let's see if we can put some distance between, you know, the immediacy and the horror of it, and bringing that onto their plates. And then we knew, yeah, it could very easily come up. And if it does, then we'll need to address it. And we will. I think a lot of people told their kids about it because they didn't want them to hear from like someone on the playground or something like that. When I say that, I'm talking about people around the country, not necessarily people here. Right. After we talked about it, we felt like for our kids, especially because we were here, then we were okay with it coming up somewhere else, providing we knew that our kids would tell us if that was the case, and that then we could address it. And I wasn't really sure. I mean, I thought, oh my goodness, they're totally going to find out. And it was really Steve who said, let's just wait and see. And so definitely because we homeschooled, and at that time, our homeschool group that we were kind of a part of, it was not based here in Newtown. It was more of a county-wide group. And no one really within those settings was talking about it, because we were around lots of kids, and though many of those kids knew, they the parents, you know, we weren't really talking about it as part of that group. And mm-hmm. I just, it just didn't happen. I think that even sometimes things were alluded to in their presence that just went over their heads and weren't questioned. And so we just went with that. I do know that I took over checking the mail for a long time, which had been my son Jonathan. He has always loved checking the mail. And I knew that newspapers and things were going to come. And so I just made a reason for why I was going to take over that job for a while. And there were several things that if someone else had checked the mail, then that would have introduced what was going on. So it was little things like that. But yes, I am staggered and very, very grateful that we were able to wait until our children were more of a developmental stage to handle it, because I know obviously many, many parents whose kids were at school that day or something, they would never have had that luxury, or just even people in the town in general whose kids went to other schools or that kind of thing. We were just, it just worked out that way, and I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And thanks really for just sharing that and for offering that perspective as well of just like why it's sometimes really wise to wait until your children can fully comprehend the news, you know, without damaging them. I wonder, Jamie, have you ever written or a blog post or anything with books specific to dealing with tragedy? I know the books that you've organized, the books that you present in the book and Give Your Child a World, and really easy to navigate ways. Is this something that you've ever done, create a list or a kind of a syllabus of books for hard times?
You know what? I haven't, but I'm writing that down because it's a really good idea.
Yeah, and, I feel like that's a great resource for people.
Yes, I definitely wrote about what was happening here, because that was at a time when, you know, I'd been blogging for several years and no one really knew. I'd always been very quiet about where we lived because of privacy. So I just talked about us living in Connecticut. So no one really knew where we lived until that happened. And I just felt like, oh my goodness, I can't be silent about this. Mm-hmm. I just have to share what it's really like here, because the news was full of Newtown, but all, of course, in this really awful sense. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a post about Newtown as I know it. And maybe I can send you that as well, just if you wanted to link to it in the show notes. It does talk about just how this place had been such an answer to prayer for our family. So I definitely wrote several posts about what was going on and how it was affecting us, but not specifically dealing with books. And that is a really great idea.
Yeah, I think that's something that I would personally be interested in. And I'm sure lots of our listeners would be also.
Many of the books, especially the Middle East chapter of Give Your Child the World, I feel like a lot of those books have to deal with the conflicts in that region of the world and with children in the situations of overcoming. So that would definitely be an easy place for readers to go to if they're looking for that specifically.
Yeah. Let's get into the book again. And again, thank you for that. I didn't know if we would get to that, but I'm glad that we took a few moments just to recognize and honor that as well. And yeah, please send us the link to that. We would love to post that in our show notes. We haven't really talked about how you structured the book. We've alluded to it a little bit, but basically you take, like you mentioned just now, chapters. It offers, you know, something like 600 recommendations for kids ranging in ages from 4 to 12, and you break it down, you know, 4 to 6, 6 to 8, et cetera, so that it is easy to just, if that's where your age range kids is, just go there in each chapter. And then you break it down in, you know, like the Middle East, Africa, et cetera. And you stop at 12, but my oldest is almost 14. And, you know, the books in that 10 to 12 age range would absolutely, he would love those. Like, I'm really excited about digging into that with him as well. But just talk to me about the process of finding all of these books.
Yes, it was a very extensive and long process that mostly I enjoyed, except for the times where I felt like it was never going to end and I was going to be 90 looking up books on Google. And yeah. So I knew I wanted to break it down into continents more or less, and then within that into age ranges. Because when you look at a regular picture book, the general age range listed is typically 4 to 8. And I make the point in the book that if you've ever had a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, you know that there's a huge developmental difference between the two. And one of the things I hope to do in the book was to break those down into further recommendations so that the age ranges I use are 4 to 6, then 6 to 8, then 8 to 10, and then 10 to 12, knowing that those are general and parents can kind of adjust those as needed because of their kids' personalities and what they need. But I hoped that would make it a little simpler for folks. And then I would just start a big, mainly online search at the beginning, looking for other lists that had been created about, say, Africa, which was the first one, the first chapter I tackled. And so I'd look on Amazon. I mean, I'd look on Goodreads. I'd look for people's posts that they'd written. And then based on what I found, I would come up with just a huge list. But what I really wanted to do was to personally be able to recommend them, because I know that for me, one of the big things I loved about having, say, Honey for a Child's Heart was that someone had vetted these books and had read them and said, yes, these are some of the best. And knowing that made me feel just really comfortable with using that as a guide myself, instead of feeling like when I just look on an online search, I feel like it's hard sometimes to tell whether something would be appropriate or not. And so then I just took it from there to get request books from my local library. Major kudos to them, because I think I broke the interlibrary loan system in general, but they were so gracious about helping me out with that. And then I honestly read all of the picture books for the most part, maybe just a couple I didn't read because I wasn't able to get them. But most of the picture books in Give Your Child the World that are mentioned, I have actually held with my hands, either read to myself or read to the kids. And then I just wanted to choose the best, the ones that I felt like had been around for a while so that they had proven themselves. And the ones that really conveyed what I felt like was the spark and the heart of a culture and what I call the spirit of a classic, meaning that just they had the power to inspire us, even if, like so many parents of 4-year-olds do, have to end up reading the same title again and again and again. And so that was the basic process. And then when it came to chapter books, I read excerpts of all of those, and depended on places like School Library Journal and Publishers Weekly who vet and kind of do a good job of recommending books like that. And it broke my heart not to be able to read them all, which I tried at first. And then I realized Give Your Child the World would be 10 years in the making instead of 5 if I did that. But now it's fun because, you know, we're seeing the book too after a year of not really living with it while it's been in the publishing process. And so it's been fun to kind of discover and choose books ourselves and start reading them with the kids, the chapter books especially. And so it's felt new to us as well.
Well, the list maker in me absolutely loves this book and the way that you've organized it. So a couple just thoughts on that. Again, you organize it for ages and then you organize it according to geography, so location. And the way I've sort of interpreted this book, like I now have, you know, lists here in front of me of like, okay, these are things I want to check out for my family. And honestly, Jamie, like I've already started my Christmas list, like my giving list, because I love giving books to my nieces and nephews. And so based on your book, I can't wait to make the list of what books I will purchase for.
Oh, I love that.
Nieces and nephews. And actually then throughout the book too, again, my list maker heart is just beating really fast here, but you give, you know, 10 ways to build a story solid foundation for your family, or 10 reasons for this. And I love that. So also with this list, and I feel like I can relate a little bit to how your mind works, you also have this 80-20 principle. So it's also this sort of concrete principle of how to parent readers. And what it is you write about just sort of trying to provide your kids with great literature, with good books, with that classic feel, but not beating yourself up if, you know, a SpongeBob SquarePants read-along book kind of finds its way into the backpack, right? So you give us this sort of principle. And I think it's just, I wanted to mention it here because I think it's another way that your book is so palatable to the average mom is like, okay, these are amazing suggestions, but this author also is a real life mom with three kids, mm-hmm. you know? So I appreciate that, your 80-20 principle. And I'm just going to read it here. In the same way that you try to feed your children healthy food the majority of the time, try to make their diet of reading material nourishing the majority of the time, but don't sweat the rest. So I feel like it's just, it makes the book very, very tangible, very, very, very real for the average reader.
Well, thank you. I feel like we just live as moms with the mom guilt complex. And I know that I have read things in the past that were never meant to make me feel guilty, but somehow they still managed to make me feel guilty. And so I just felt like I needed to write it the way that I would want to read it for myself. And I try really hard again and again throughout Give Your Child the World to point out and reiterate that you are the expert on your children, on your family. So whenever an idea from the book or a book title itself inspires you or makes you feel that spark inside, then that's your signal to pursue it. But we don't have to do it perfectly. There's no such thing. And we can each implement it in the ways that work for us. So I'm so glad that came across to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we did a whole episode on mommy guilt. And I think for those of us who love reading, this is one of them. Like, I cannot stand how one of my kids will only read a book if it has an athlete on the cover or as a main character. Oh my God. But at the same time, he's, you know, going into middle school. So he's about to enter this stage where in his public school, he's going to have books he has to read and has to do this. So it's like, I don't want him to fall in love with reading for pleasure, you know, fall out of love, I should say, of reading for pleasure, because I think that happens so quickly, specifically for boys. It seems like in our culture, there's not as much, you know, appreciation for boys who love to, you know, dive into a quick book at the lunch table. So I did appreciate that, you know, as long as I'm like, hey, read this one and then you can read two of your, or whatever the scenario is, you know, so I appreciated that. So, you know, we're talking a lot about books, and that's the beautiful thing. Public libraries. I'm actually at a public library currently because, because I'm in a random town for one of my kids' sporting events. But so I love public libraries too. I mean, they should be a sponsor for your books and our podcast. So, and because they're accessible, you don't need any money, you know, they're free. And so that is one way, right, that we can raise globally minded kids. The three of us have adopted. We know that has a way of kind of bringing the world to your front door as well. But how else do you and your husband raise intentionally your kids to be globally minded?
That's a good question. And it's chapter 2 of Give Your Child the World where I talk about practical tips to bring the world to invite the world into your home. So that's
another
filled with
list. I love it.
That's another list. It's filled with a lot of ideas besides just the books that come in the later half of the book. Because I wanted to give people other ideas as well. And there are so many things you can choose, but a few that have become part of just what we do as Martins is that we are avid map collectors and users. So I guess we have a globe in our dining room. We have a world map in our dining room. And then we have a USA map that's kind of on the border between our kitchen and dining room. And those are just things that we not only put there, but we use them regularly. So when something comes up around the dinner table or in one of our stories, because it's right there, then we can say, okay, does everyone know where that is? And point it out and make sure people know. And that's a little thing, but it makes a big difference. So something else we do that I have loved over the past year is we created what we call a prayer bowl. And we just put on little slips of paper everything from relatives. From yesterday, it was my Nana in North Carolina, who's 94. And it can be everything from that to someone or a cause overseas, a country that's part of your heritage, just anything that's on your heart near or far. And once a day, we pick someone out of the bowl and pray for whatever is on that slip of paper. And that has been just a phenomenal way to bring global mindedness into the busyness of our day. You know, this is around the breakfast table or something like that, in a way that makes it feel very tangible and practical. And also just, it's easy, you know, to be consumed with thinking of ourselves and our issues. And so it's just a little way to kind of, oh yeah, remember to think of someone else. And so those are a couple things out of several ideas that I give that have become just part of our everyday lives in a way that has really worked for us.
That is fantastic. Jamie, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. I love the book. I know Tessie and I were so excited for this conversation. And yeah, on behalf of all the mama bears out there who we know will greatly benefit from all of the really hard work that you put into this book, thank you so much. We so believe that it's important for our kids, particularly the ones growing up here in the Western world, to hear about life outside of our own communities and our own country. So thank you for writing this book, and thank you for taking the time.
Oh my goodness. Thank you guys. And let's make sure we set up a time where you can come over and read that introduction for me at the bottom of the screen. That would be great.
Oh, 100%. We'll figure that out. We'll touch base. We'll set our clocks. Yeah. But Jamie, can you let our mama bears know? They often give us feedback and say, hey, where can we find these people on social media? We want to follow along. We want to see more of their family and learn more about them. So are you on social media? Where can people follow you?
Yes, definitely. Well, obviously you can head to my blog, which is simplehomeschool.net. But my Facebook page is also a really active place where I post about intentional education and just also what we're doing as a family and links to articles. It's not just for homeschoolers, but just for people interested in intentional education. And so that Facebook page is just called Simple Homeschool. And that's probably where I spend the most of my time, my social media time. So that's where I would recommend that you head.
Great. And awesome. Mama Bears, head to our website, www.mamabeardarespodcast.com, and you will find links to purchase all of Jamie's books, and specifically check out this one, Give Your Child the World, Raising Globally Minded Kids One Book at a Time.
Yeah. And we will link to the articles you spoke about too throughout the podcast. So it's all on our website. But Jamie, thank you so much for giving us an hour of your time. We so appreciate it. And good luck with your book. We hope that it gets in the hands of as many mama bears as humanly possible.
Thank you so much. I'm just so grateful for the invitation. It's been a pleasure to connect with you both.
Mama Bears, today we dare you to think about story. Think about your own story and give yourself some credit. It's pretty incredible when you really think about it, isn't it? The things you've lived through, the characters that make up the pages, even the seemingly average and mundane is precious and exciting because it belongs to you. You had a hand in creating it. As you walk through the pages of your life and raise your little ones, think about those in your life and remember that story is what connects us with one another, even those on the other side of the globe who are living lives seemingly opposite of our own. Think about your story foundation and that of your kids and encourage them to use the uplifting, beautiful, and redemptive tales as a shield from the world's cynicism. Explore the world together through carefully crafted pages and adventure through the tales of others in order to broaden your own experience and your reservoir of compassion. This love and empathy and compassion is what will spill over into a lifetime of love in action. Explore stories, discuss them, allow them to enlarge your perspective and your heart, and make your own story a broad, beautiful page turner full of sweet and brave action and love.
Oh, I love that, sister. I mean, come on, a reservoir of compassion? What? I love it so much. Good job, Mama Bears. Thank you so much for coming with us again. If you love Jamie, we have linked to where you can find her on our website. Make sure you check that out, www.mamabeardarespodcast.com. Also, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and join the conversation there. Not only do we usually hear from our listeners on this episode's page, but we also like to just ask you about a potential new topic we're going to explore on the podcast, and we love feedback for that too. So do that. And then also right now, go to iTunes, please, and leave a rate and review on this podcast. It helps us reach more listeners. And if you are a podcast listener, you hear every single one of the hosts ask this, right? And there's a reason, because it makes a really big difference. Super easy for you, and it's free. If you have any questions about how to do it, send us an email at mamabeardares@gmail.com. Otherwise, you guys have a great week, and we will see you back here on Wednesday.
See you on Wednesday.